in this episode of She's Off Script.
I remember being in Colorado and thinking to myself, I actually wrote this down. I said, if I go back to Nigeria and I don't find a job that I want to do for the rest of my life, I'll create one.
4 years after making that pledge to herself in Boulder, Colorado, Fumio Yatagun founded TVP Adventures, a travel company that simplifies travel to the African continent by providing affordable and easy-to-book all-inclusive experiences.
The most beautiful things I've seen in the world, I saw them in Africa. I saw Victoria Falls and I lost my breath. I mean, it was breathtaking. Like, I cried. I've never seen anything so beautiful, and this is on the continent.
Join me as we go off script with Africa's most adventurous woman. Fumi Oyetogun, welcome to She's Off Script. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Sarah.
For those of you listening that may not know this, Fumi and I went to the University of Colorado at Boulder together. At the time, I was an RA in the engineering quad. Yes. I think it was my senior year, and she was an incoming freshman.
Do you actually remember the story of how we met? Huh. Or no? Because I remember.
You're going to have to remind me.
Give you a hint?
Sure.
Okay. I lost something and you found it.
Wow. You have a good memory. So what did you lose?
Okay. So I was very new. I came in January. So this was in the brutal winter. I left my wallet somewhere. Mm-hmm. Someone found it. I think I might have left. I don't remember where. I think in the dining hall or something. I left my wallet. Someone found it because they found some sort, like they somehow found that I lived in the quad.
Oh.
So they saw that I was black. So they looked for you because they knew that you were an RA in the quad. and then you come to my dorm and you're like, hi, how much money do you have in this wallet? Tell me the
That sounds like me, trust but verify.
It was so funny. So yes, that happened. And so you were one of the first Africans that I met. And then you invited me to, it was BSA, actually, that you invited me to. And then from BSA, I was invited to ASA. And
Oh, it's always nice to take a trip down memory lane. But fast forward almost a decade, I started to see you popping up on Instagram, doing some interesting things with your company, TVP Adventures. As far as going off script, I would say you're doing some phenomenal things.
Thank you.
Of course. So seeing the work that you do now makes me curious. When you were younger, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Wait, which age?
Well, it's your choice. What's your earliest recollection of picking a career for yourself?
First thing I remember was I wanted to be a doctor because as a child, I mean, there's such few things that you see.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to be a doctor because I did pretty well in the sciences. And I thought, you know, hey, engineering didn't really sound too exciting. So medicine was the only thing. But that was very short-lived. I think I was still in primary school when I knew that I started getting interested in the environment. I started getting interested in nature. I also knew that I wanted to travel and I wanted a job. So in my head, I was going to be a National Geographic explorer.
Wow. I will say that you're unique in that from your formative years, you already knew you'd be here in some way, shape, or form.
Yes. I couldn't in my wildest, 2 years ago, 3 years ago in my wildest dreams, I didn't think I'd be doing it in this way. But I knew that this was, you know, this was like the neighborhood of where I wanted to be.
So then did you feel pressure to take a more traditional or widely recognized career path?
No, I didn't.
That's good to hear.
I didn't. I'm very thankful because I have super amazing parents. So I don't know if you know this, but the reason why I lived in the engineering quad is because I was actually admitted for environmental engineering.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I knew I wanted to do something in environmental space. So I went into environmental engineering thinking, well, it's like the pinnacle of the environmental sciences, right? So I thought. And then after 1 year of environmental engineering, I knew that this wasn't for me. So yeah, I told my dad, well, I declared environmental studies first.
Wow. But sometimes I guess it's better to ask for forgiveness.
I know, because, you know, my parents were paying international tuition and I had to be, I wasn't going too far off the plan. But I called my dad and he just asked me two questions. Why do you want to do this? Are you sure? Okay, well, mm-hmm. don't forget to, you know, study hard. So I didn't feel any pressure whatsoever. And I'm so thankful for that because it allowed, I still don't feel pressure to do, you know, anything traditional. I feel like my parents, they set us on the path of self-discovery, exploration. They were always there to guide us, right? So they were always there, like, and they're still old school, whether you like it or not. So they're mm-hmm. always like we say in Nigeria, they were chucking their ideas in your head.
What a saying.
Hence the engineering. But no, my parents, I guess they know us more than we know ourselves. So they know that, hey, this child has been, since JS2, I was representing my school in environmental conferences in the world, mm-hmm. all the way from Nigeria. We co-founded the Environmental Conservation Club. Mm-hmm. So I mean, when I said I was moving to environmental studies, it was one of those things like, oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, sounds like your parents saw that coming.
I think they did. Yeah.
So now we fast forward to today, where you've now launched TVP Adventures with the mission of uncovering Africa for Africans. Why is that so important to you?
So it's important to me because I think the whole world is very undereducated and underinformed about what's going on in Africa. Mm-hmm. And I'm so disappointed to say that Africans are just as underinformed about the rest of the continent as the rest of the world. I know my country like the back of my hand. I eat, sleep, breathe Nigeria. I know a little bit about Ghana. And that's it. So the typical Nigerian believes that there's a genocide going on in Rwanda.
Is that right?
There's the uprising going on in the north of Africa currently. It's just we believe the randomest things. We believe that everywhere in Kenya has lions and tigers still. So yes, I mean, there are things that we share in common. But truth is, a lot of Africans still don't know about Africa. And that's because we are consumers of Western media. So the same way the West is consuming Western media, we are consuming Western media as well. So the only reliable source of information that we have about Africa is from other Africans. And how much access do we really have to other Africans? Not a lot. Mm-hmm. Second thing is, there's a lot to do on this continent. My God, the most beautiful things I've seen in the world, I saw them in Africa. Right, I saw Victoria Falls and I lost my breath. I was just worshiping. I was like, this is definitely God showing off. I mean, it was breathtaking. Like, I cried. I've never seen anything so beautiful. And this is on the continent. I don't know why that's not the poster child for tourism.
Wow, I'm sad to say I've never been, although I did have a friend that bungee jumped off of Victoria Falls. It looked amazing, yeah. But I would never.
I did that. So it's not really off course because you'll die. It's okay. With the view of the falls, right? So it's like parallel to the falls. It's amazing. So there's a lot of tourism opportunity. There's a lot to see, right? Travel is about exploring culture, history, place, nature, destinations. There's a lot to see in Africa. We just don't know because a lot of African countries aren't doing as well, as good marketing as other parts of the world. Or we have poor flight connectivity. It's expensive. So my goal is to give people access to see Africa, not because you want to do this for loyalty to the continent or because you want to do this as a charity cause or because it's a nice thing to do, but because it is viable. I mean, your dreams are in Africa. Your bucket list can be ticked off in Africa. If you mm-hmm. have 10 more days to live and you wanted to see a place, there are places in Africa that could make that list. So I want people to see that. And I want us to like close the gap, break the borders existing on our continent and make it more affordable and accessible to explore.
So Fumi, how do you bridge that information gap? There may be some tourists in the US or in the West that would love to consider the African continent as a yes. travel destination, but have security concerns or other misconceptions. How do you alleviate those fears that might stop them from ultimately mm-hmm. making the visit?
Right. Well, I think the first thing I need to say is, well, African countries, so let me use Lagos, for instance. Lagos is not any more unsafe than any other city of its kind. Lagos is not more unsafe than New York, Delhi, London, or any comparable city to it. So I think a lot of people need to get that into their minds. Africa, of course, we have our issues, right? But nobody has stopped traveling to America with all the gun violence going on. So it's just, I think it's just about the perspective, right? When you look at countries like the States or the UK, there's a balance of stories coming out. So you might hear about one shooting and you might hear about 10 other amazing things going on. But with Africa, there's not a balance. So while these things that are being reported are happening, they're not happening at the frequency or with the volume that they're being repeated, because there's like a scarcity of stories that sell. So we're going to just keep reinforcing the ones that are selling. So when you're coming to the continent, bear in mind that you just need the regular amount of caution and open eye, like you say, that you need when you're going anywhere else, right? Mm-hmm. So if you lived in Boulder, Colorado all your life and you were going to New York, you would travel with your eyes open. You would watch out for certain things. That's about as much caution as you need when coming to the African continent. And I need to stress this because most people who come here don't get into any sort of trouble. Most people who come here don't get into crime. And unfortunately, there is crime because they're humans, but it's very minimal and it's not as crazy as the world is making it to be. That being said, I like to tell people that I'm more concerned about their safety than they are because...
Okay, that's definitely comforting to hear from the company providing the experience.
Yes, I'm more concerned about your safety than you are, because if you got into any trouble of your own accord, no one's going to blame anybody. But if you got into trouble on my accord, I'm in trouble. So we do our best. We always scout and make sure that the routes that we are going are tried, they're tested, they're safe. We've worked with mobile security where necessary. It's very unnecessary most times, but once in a while, we might be going into the forest. And while we don't need the mobile security, we have them just to make people happy and safe. And we're really just giving the policemen a nice trip because they never really get to do anything. but we dot our I's and cross our T's. We have all of our trips are insured. We have insurance on every single trip, everything that we're doing, so people can rest assured that there's insurance. And we just do our best. You know, we also know the places that we're working. So we know the continent. We work with locals in the continent. I never go to another country and, you know, start touring. We're always working with communities and local tour operators who know their communities like the back of their hands. Nothing is going to happen to you when a local, the son of the soil, is taking you around. It's just not possible. So
you are definitely instilling some confidence in me to dive into an adventure with TVP Adventures. It just sounds like you are very thorough in your preparation to take people out on these excursions. Fumi, I have to say, you're probably one of the most adventurous people I know. Seriously, just seeing all the accounts of the trips you've taken, the things that you do once you get there, I am amazed half the time I see those pictures. I would even venture as far as to say you're a living rebuttal to all of those black people don't statements. You know, black people don't hike, bungee jump, all of those. And so I am curious, have the people closest to you become more open to taking adventures given what you're offering through your company?
Yes. So we've seen people light up when they see that, wait, we can climb mountains. Oh, wait, we can go snorkeling. Wait, we can go jet skiing. Oh, we can swim with turtles and dolphins in Africa. Wait, we can go cruising. Like all these things, skiing in the south of Africa. There's so many things that people don't do just because they don't know. Right. So I don't think any one race was one more adventurous than the other. But I think certain races or certain areas of the world have been exposed to more adventure than others.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I think Africans or black people in general are not as adventurous in nature as non-black people. But I don't think that's because of any DNA genetics or inherent aversion to adventure. I think it's just culture and it's nurture. We're not allowed to swim when you're a child. You're not allowed to climb mountains. It's almost like, no, let's preserve this one. So when you grow up, you still have that fear. But when you show people all the things that they can do, I'm telling you, last week I announced that we're climbing Kilimanjaro next year, exactly 1 year from now, and we have all of our 10 slots gone.
Wow, that's incredible.
But in 4 days, 10 people, and it's, Kilimanjaro is a pretty expensive mountain to climb. So I think it's just people, now that people know, and then when people see that this black girl with natural hair is jumping in and out of water bodies and flying off things and swinging off things, it's almost like, wait, I can do that too.
Oh, you're definitely living up to your reputation of being Africa's most adventurous woman. I actually came across a bucket list map that you had put together of all the African countries you'd like to visit. How far have you gotten with that?
Girl, first of all, okay, that title is very ambitious. I put it there. It's like a faith journey for me. I'm getting there, right? I'm nowhere the most adventurous.
Oh, you seem to be.
No, but I think I have probably the most adventurous spirit on the continent. But obviously, I haven't done nearly as much as I can. So I'm getting there. But I don't know. I think at last count, I've done about 12 or 13 African countries. But I'm going to get to all the countries, and I'm going to get to them not just to tick them off the list. I'm going to get to them as many times. I've been to Kenya at least 10 times.
Wow.
And I'm still going twice this year because, I mean, I'm not a traveler for the sake of ticking off lists. There's always a new experience. I mean, there's always a new person to interact with, always a new village to explore, always a new adventure to embark on in one country. Actually, I'm trying to get to all the countries of the world before I die.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to explore Africa from the perspective of somebody who's African, but also somebody who's least expected to explore this continent, right? So as a woman, as somebody who is African, we're not the model explorer. We're not the model geographer. We're not the model storyteller, you know, going into the continent to see things. But I think we are supposed to be, because we're the ones who have the I don't know, the cultural capital, I would say, to uncover what's going on the continent.
Fumi, I love how you continue to sell the continent in everything that you do, which makes me even more curious about your business. Could you share with us what process you went through to create and launch TVP?
Like I said, I didn't know that I was going to be running a travel company. I knew that I wanted to travel and explore and tell stories from the perspective of an explorer. But I didn't know that I would be running this business. What happened was I went to UK for grad school and I moved back home.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in the UK, I started blogging about my travel experiences. So I was just writing stories. I was even sharing recipes inspired by the places I was going. So I really just wanted a platform to talk about travel and to kind of give people some guides based on what I had experienced. Mm-hmm. Then I came home and people were increasingly asking for travel guides and for tour packages. So I thought, okay, well, maybe there's a market for this. And maybe, you know, I also noticed that I had some difficulty trying to get around the continent. It wasn't as easy as like traveling Europe, for instance, when I lived in the UK. But I was also being very cautious and careful because I was coming back home for the first time in a while. And I didn't want to just, you know, impose this like lofty idea on people. And, you know, the Nigerian market doesn't follow any patterns or rules or logic or anything like that. So I was very cautious. But then sometime in June or July, somebody called me and said, hey, I'm looking for what to do on Independence Day, which is the 1st of October. I'm looking for a package. I really need to go somewhere to clear my head. And I was like, okay, well, this is a holiday coming up. I have some time. Let me plan something. So I planned a trip. And he ended up not coming.
Oh, no.
But 14 people showed up. Like, I had one bus, and I had to shut down bookings because I was like, look, I can't handle this. So 14 people showed up, paid on the spot, and said they wanted to go explore this place that I had been to and I knew about. And we went, and I got a photographer. I was the tour guide. I booked, made all the bookings, got a bus driver. We had a wonderful time. And after that, a lot more people were interested in exploring. So I started out with the places I had been. And then gradually, I, you know, started to grow the tours, the frequency of tours, started to explore new places, assembled a team. And that's how we got here, really. It's been like a day-by-day kind of journey in a country where I think running a business in general is hard, but running a business in Nigeria as such a young person is especially hard. But I've had so much support and I've learned so much. And I think we've been able to add value to people's lives, bring travel dreams to reality in the last 2 years.
Fumi, I think you alluded to this earlier, but what are some of the things that make it challenging to have a startup in Nigeria?
When it comes to things like infrastructural support, it's a little bit thin in Nigeria, right? So in other countries, you know that all you have to do is innovate and put the work in, right? It's hard work, but you don't have to worry about providing electricity for yourself. You don't have to worry about just powering your ideas or powering your existence. And that costs a lot and takes a lot of time and energy and funds. Same thing with infrastructure on the roads, right? So we do a lot of road travel. And it's hard because no matter how excellent of a planner I am, I can't build roads. I also can't fix bad roads. And like the government, even if I wanted to, the government won't let me, but I can't. I don't have the capacity to do that. So it's little things like that. You know, once in a while, we won't be able to guarantee when people will get back from a particular road trip because we could spend 4 hours in traffic coming back. So it's little things like that. It's also, small businesses are not very, they're increasingly being supported now, but they're not as supported as they can be. So getting access to funds, to scale and things like that. But, you know, we're defying the odds. You know, the people, like I like to say that the people who have been successful don't have two heads. So we're defying the odds and it's hard work and we're doing our best to try to make it easier for those coming behind us. But it is challenging nonetheless.
So in spite of those challenges, it sounds like you were able to test your idea with a couple of excursions and get a working proof of concept. How did you finance your business?
I bootstrapped and I'm still bootstrapping.
That's incredible. How does that work?
Okay, so, right now we're currently in an accelerator program and we're speaking to investors. So hopefully we'll be able to get investments to scale.
Thank you.
Initially, it was really just personal funds, fund payments, lost money at the early stages, broke even after maybe 1 year. And then now started to build profit little by little. And I've been bootstrapping along the way. But I'm excited for the possibility of investors, investments, and partnerships. Because really, our goal eventually is to sort of be a platform where local tour operators across the continent, like an Airbnb for tours, where local tour operators across the continent can have a platform where clients can access them directly. And I think that's how we're going to scale like beyond our current plans.
So when it first dawned on you that TVP could be a viable business, did you have any naysayers or haters who just were projecting fears on you?
Yes, I still have naysayers.
Interesting. So how do you stop those voices from getting in the way of your progress?
Oh, we love naysayers.
Really?
No, so actually, so I remember being in undergrad. I remember being in Colorado and thinking to myself, I actually wrote this down. I said, if I go back to Nigeria and I don't find a job that I want to do for the rest of my life, I'll create one.
Wow.
I always had this mentality and I would always tell people that, but people would always tell me, oh, it's easy for you to say, you're sitting here in America.
Those naysayers again.
So I came home actually. So I had the opportunity to stay back in the States, but I wanted to come home because I felt like God was telling me to come home first of all. I also knew that if I wanted to test the waters of coming home to build something, then was the time. I was just 20 years old when I graduated. And look, what do I have to lose, right?
That's true.
I came home, I did my national service year. And that was kind of like a test run year for me to see whether I wanted to stay home, if I wanted to try to build anything. I had 4 jobs during my NYC year because I put myself in everything. It was like an internship year for me. And after NYC ended, I told myself, you can do this, girl. It's difficult, but it doesn't make sense, but you can do this. When I went to grad school and came back, I came back with the mentality that I would use my youth to build what I can. And the worst that's going to happen is I'll fail, but I'll still be young and I'll learn what I can from that and move on, right? I also feel like I might be wrong, but I feel like I have I have the privilege and the opportunity to get a job if I needed, like if I got so frustrated with this process, I could get a job, right? I don't have any intentions to do that, but I could. So I feel like I'm the best person to kind of do this experiment because I have nothing to lose.
Well, while that might be the case, do you feel like you've had to sacrifice anything to get where you are today?
I had to give up certainty. I had to give up, you know, there's something that comes, like when you start building a career plan or path, there's something that comes with the structure that comes with that and knowing this is what you're going to earn, this is what you feel like you deserve to earn after all this education and all that. There's something about giving that up. I had to like move out of my service flat and move back with my lovely parents.
You know, it's always nice to have that option.
but while these things might not be ideal, it's a blessing for me, right? Because who's going to try to do this? Somebody who has like rents to pay and kids to feed, like they're not good. This is not the priority for them. So I felt like, you know what? I also believe in God, and I believe that God, this was what God wanted me to do, right? This was my calling. This is like my daytime. You know how the Bible says, I'll do the work of He who sent me while it's day. Night cometh when no man can work.
Mm-hmm.
If this was a 24-hour day, this is like my 6 a.m. And if I can't work at 6 a.m., if I can't build at 6 a.m., how am I going to try to build at 6 p.m.? So I wanted to maximize my youth to do what I believe I'm supposed to do. So that's what happened. A lot of people felt like, really, you're going to waste all this money that was spent and you're going to give up all these job opportunities in Kenya, in Nigeria, the UK, in the US. I had a full-time job for 1 year here before I finally went full-time with CVP. So these are things that are happening. There are people who will tell you that, you know, you're wasting your time. But the truth, Sarah, is your circle is very important because I've had the majority of the voices that I hear are positive voices.
So it sounds like having a balance of people and perspectives around you is a key part of the equation here.
Yes. I'm also a strong believer in accountability, right? I believe that we're humans for a reason. We're not trees. Even trees have like communities, but we're humans. We bounce ideas off each other. We feed off each other's emotions. We learn from people like that. I have a very strong accountability circle who can smack me when I'm, you know, being foolish. And I think it's very important to surround yourself with people who will build you up, not puff you up, not fill you up with empty hot air, but build you up in a constructive way. And I tell you, the majority of the voices that I hear are positive voices. I've had my parents lead tours for me.
Wow.
Because I felt sick. And my tour assistant, it was just me and my tour assistant. My tour assistant was able to be there, but my parents assisted on the tour because I physically couldn't go. So, I mean, if that's not support, I don't know. So I've had positive voices. My parents think it's a stupid idea for me to try to use any resource I have to get a place of my own. They're like, why would you do that? Live here until you can't live here anymore and use your resources to grow. So I have support. And I think it's because I've consciously allowed, like I'm thankful for the gifts that I have. But in terms of like the business circle, I've made a conscious effort to make sure that I'm surrounding myself with people who tell me this is a bad idea. We've made this mistake before. Don't waste your time doing this. This is great. We have your back. Just have so much positive, constructive, influence around me.
Mm-hmm.
I do. And I don't take that for granted at all.
Fumi, there's so many nuggets in everything that you've shared with us today. If there were 3 action items you would encourage our listeners to look into, especially if they're looking to go off script with their travel, which you certainly do, or with their career path, what would they be?
Right. Yes. I think the first thing is, I think everybody should have a vision board.
So Fumi, for those of us listening who are unfamiliar with vision boards, could you describe it for us?
Oh my God. So a vision board is literally a visual representation of what your dreams are, what you want to achieve, And your vision board is constantly changing. It's evolving. You're adding stuff to it. You can have a new vision board every year. You can have one for 5 years. It's up to you. But it's something that you see in the morning when you wake up and you see a picture of a president, if your goal is to be the president. You see the picture of Mount Kilimanjaro, if your goal is to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. You see Bible verses to inspire you, or verses from your holy book, or quotes from people you respect. Or if your goal is to, your goal for the next 6 months is to grow a huge afro, there's a woman with the afro of your dreams. It's just, it's a collage that features all of the things that you see for yourself. Because there's no power like the power of like a visualized reality or something that you've put down, like you've written. I think writing is very important. When you've written something down, it's like halfway real. When you visualize it as an image, that's the first thing I see when I wake up in the morning and I remind myself that this is where you're going, right? But more importantly, the process of creating my vision board was very important for me. Because I couldn't just start slapping pictures, right? I tried to create a vision board by just cutting out pictures from magazines. And I was struggling. It took me like a month or 2 months. I wrote down, I actually went through a very short workshop, but you don't have to go through the workshop. I wrote down my goals, my dreams, things that matter to me, my priorities, where I see myself, what I believe in, what I want for myself. And so the process of writing that down and then converting it to visuals is like creating a life plan for yourself, sort of. I think everybody should have a vision board or something that represents your dreams, right? So if you're not a very visual person and you'd rather write down your goals on a huge whiteboard on your wall, whatever it is, I think you should have some sort of representation of your vision.
Fumi, I would love to see Africa's Most Adventurous Woman's vision board, and I'm sure our listeners are curious as well. So if you don't mind, we'll probably either link to it or put a picture of it in our show notes, just so we can have some vision board inspiration.
Oh, great. Okay, that's fine. Okay, then the second thing is, please, don't try to go on this journey alone. I know a lot of people are iffy about this one, but if you have surrounded yourself with people who are healthy for you, people who love you, people you love, if you've surrounded yourself with a very healthy circle, then you have nothing to worry about in bouncing off your ideas. If I tell you how many mistakes I made in my first year simply because I thought I have this brilliant idea, I want to do this, and all I had to do was ask somebody who's ahead of me in the game, and they would tell me, nope, that's dumb, or that doesn't work in Nigeria. Or they'll tell me, you know, I don't think that worked for me, but I think it'll work for you. It's very like in the multitude of counsel, good counsel, there's safety. Truth is established. Have a mind of your own. Have where you're going. But we're humans. We're community. We have family. We have loved ones. We have friends. We have people that we are in our corners. And I think they should be in our corners for real, right?
That's a good one. Absolutely agree.
So I'll give you a real quick example. The first time I was ever hiring, I was so overwhelmed with all the work that I was doing. I thought what I needed was to duplicate myself. So I was trying to hire somebody who would do the exact same thing that I'm doing so we can split the workload. I struggled for like 6 months. I couldn't find the right fit. I was going back and forth. And then I finally found someone. I gave her a task, but I felt like she wasn't doing it as good as I could do it. And in my mind, I needed somebody who could replace me or, you know, be. And then I finally occurred to me that, wait, I have people, I have mentors, and I have people who are, you know, we're both young and building businesses together, but they've been doing this longer than I have. And I simply asked one of my friends, I was like, this is what I'm doing. What do you think? I vented to him and he was like, why would you hire a duplicate? You need to hire somebody complimentary. So you need to hire somebody who does exactly what you cannot do. And I had spent so much effort, time, money, wastage of resources trying to get somebody who was like me. And that wasn't what I needed. What I needed was somebody who would do what I can't do. And then both of us would complement each other. And that was the first time I really learned that lesson. And ever since then, I just don't walk the walk alone. I go with people. I have trusted mentors and people who I can say, hey, what do you think about this? And, you know, at the end of the day, you pick the meat and leave the bones, right? But I think it's so much better. And this is not just for business, by the way. It's life too, you know, like you're getting married. The people who are happily married, bounce ideas off them. Like, you know, you are buying a house. The people who bought houses, bounce ideas off them. What's the third thing? The biggest scam in the world is comfort zones. Get out of your comfort zone, you know, like go see the world, come see Africa.
Oh, I love the plug.
No, but actually go out of your comfort zone. Life is short. I don't mean to be morbid or anything, but my mom's a twin and her twin dropped dead randomly.
Oh no.
3 weeks to my brother's wedding, actually, her twin just collapsed and died. And nobody would have ever foreseen. This is a woman who had so many goals and dreams. And, you know, they didn't do an autopsy, but she probably just had a heart attack or something. You know, she just collapsed. And in that moment, that was it. You know how people get maybe diagnosed with a terminal disease or something happens in their life, tragedy strikes, and all of a sudden their perspective is rewired and it's almost like now they're focused on things that actually matter. I wish we didn't have to go through that to do the things that actually mattered. I wish we would do it now. Mm-hmm. I wish we would just live our best lives. You want to go see something, go see it. You want to do this. You want to build something. Sarah, I'm 26 now. And the worst that will happen is by 30, I'll look back and I'll be like, snap, I just wasted the last 6 years building something that crashed. But imagine the lessons that I would have learned.
An experience like yours could never be a waste.
Exactly. Imagine the lessons I could have learned. Imagine like, I don't know, I feel like I would have a story to tell my kids and they'd pat me on the back and be like, yes, mommy. You did well.
Oh, they'll probably think you're the coolest mom ever.
I hope so.
On that note, Fumi, thank you so much for chatting with us today. It was great catching up. For people listening that would like to connect with you, where can they find you?
TVPAdventures.com is our website. We're at TVPAdventures on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. I'm also Fumi Oyatogun, so I'm sure Sarah will have it written somewhere.
Yes, in the show
notes. I'm FumiOyatogun.com, Fumi Oyatogun on Instagram, Fumi Oyatogun on Twitter. I love, 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 love to interact with people. I might be coming to a city near you. Please hit me up. Send me a DM. I respond to all my messages except the creepy ones. So
Well, please do take her up on that offer. If you've been convinced to take a trip to the African continent, you now know who to reach out to. We'll have all of Fumi's information linked in the show notes.
Thank you so much, Sewa. Thanks for having me.
Hi there, it's Sewa. If you'd like to hear more from me, head over to She's Offscript and sign up to get our weekly Offscript updates. I'm also on Instagram at She's Offscript. Every week, we'll continue the conversation on the She's Offscript Facebook community. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes. I would love to hear your thoughts on my show.